Welcome to the Buckmaster Show on KVOI for this Friday, July the 6th, 2012. Hope you are having a great day and looking forward to a good weekend. With the 4th of July in the middle of the week, it kind of feels like we've had kind of a mini weekend, and now we've got another weekend upon us. I am Bill Buckmaster, and we thank you for choosing the Buckmaster Show. We are live Monday through Friday, noon to 1 on AM 1030 KVOI, Tucson's intelligent voice. We're streaming the program live on my website, buckmastershow.com, and on the radio station's website, kvoi.com. And we have 24/7 anytime listening of our program. We post the show to three websites. Again, buckmastershow.com, tucsoncitizen.com, carrying our program, as does TucsonSentinel.com. Our Friday Focus interview today is with Roberto Villasenor, Chief of the Tucson Police Department. Joining me to question the Chief, Sarah Garrett Gasson, editorial writer for the Arizona Daily Star. If you have a question or comment, you can call us on the Buckmaster Show live line 790-2040. Or if you are online right now, you can post a question to our Facebook page. We'll monitor that over the next half hour. Friday Focus on the Buckmaster Show, presented by Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley. Splendido is a true continuing care retirement community. Find out more at SplendidoTucson.com. Chief Villasenor, good to see you. Hope you had a great 4th of July.
Actually, I did, and it's nice to be back on the show.
Thanks a lot. Sarah, good to see you.
Nice to see you.
Did you have fun watching the fireworks?
I did. We actually didn't make it up to Tucson, but there were some fireworks that probably shouldn't have been going off in our neighborhood down south, but they were nice to see.
That's for another
rain came that day.
That's for another story. Chief, what are you hearing from your legal advisors regarding implementing Section 2B, the so-called papers, please provision of SB 1070? When will that go into effect?
It's really uncertain when it will actually go into effect. The way the court rulings happen, though, is the Supreme Court issued their verdict, and they remand it back to the circuit court and to Judge Bolton. And there's a time period of so many days that have to pass according to the rules of the Supreme Court. So the earliest any decision could come out from the lower courts would be on July 20th, but that's not a guarantee. And we just are preparing ourselves as to what we need to do to follow the rulings of the court.
And you've been doing, with your officers, lots of training.
Well, we did 2 years ago when the law first was passed, and we sat down with every officer on the department. We showed the video made by AZ Post, which is the governing agency that covers law enforcement officers. And then we did additional training, which consisted of scenarios and a lot of question and answer period, because it is quite a confusing a law for officers who have not had extensive training in that area. And so we wanted to make sure that the ones who would be encountering these issues in the street and had a better idea of the type of issues they would encounter could pose those to us with the legal advisor and myself, and we could give them direction on how we felt that needed to be dealt with.
Here is Sarah Garrett Gasson.
I'm wondering, during those trainings and since then, especially since the ruling, I think last week, what kind of questions are you getting from the people in the field? What are the concerns that officers are having?
Right now, there's not a lot of questions coming forward from the field because we're not quite sure what the federal response is going to be yet. And probably that's the department question that we're getting. We have been in communication with Border Patrol, which is who we deal with down here. We don't deal much with ICE. We deal with the Border Patrol because of their strong presence here. And we're trying to get a definitive answer as to what their level of response will be when we call. I'm sure you're aware that the day that the ruling came out, the Department of Homeland Security put out some guidelines which said what they would respond to. And in actuality, that lessened somewhat, according to those guidelines, to the response that they had to us before SB 1072B went into effect. Or goes into effect. Because really, right now, and since I've been an officer, whenever an officer in the street encountered someone they felt was here illegally, it was a phone call to Border Patrol. And because of such strong presence and the increasing numbers of Border Patrol agents, they're very quick in responding to what could have been just a simple traffic stop. now the direction given out under DHS is they will no longer respond to those events, and they will only become involved in those situations that deal with their prosecutorial discretion, which are convicted criminals, people who are a threat to national security, or people who just recently crossed over the border. But they are saying that they will respond to our phone calls, so we have to see how quickly, because just in Tucson alone, we expect that number to go up by 40 to 50,000 phone calls that were not occurring before SB 1070.
Does SB, the Section 2B, does it really change what officers can do?
Not what they can do, but what they must do. We've always had, like I said, officers who have had the ability to involve Border Patrol when they come across people they think here are illegally, but the officers had discretion. And now what has occurred with SB 1070, that discretion has been for the most part taken away. And the officers, if they have reasonable suspicion, they are required to make inquiry as to the immigration status. There are some ways that an individual can satisfy that inquiry through certain documentation. And I know people are calling it the show me your papers provision.
Papers, please.
Yes, it's really not a papers, please provision. There was an element of SB 1070 that involved the requirement to carry documentation that was struck down by the Supreme Court. But there is presumptive identification that an individual can show to an officer who is questioning their citizenship, which would end the inquiry right there if there's no other criminal offenses to arrest for. That could be a driver's license, a passport, military ID, or any type of government ID that requires proof of citizenship before that ID is issued. So let's say, to break it down in a simple, easy-to-explain way, an officer stops someone for a traffic violation that is not criminal. For whatever reason, they determine or they make reasonable suspicion that the people in the car or the driver is here illegally. They ask for identification, which they have a right to do on a traffic offense. The individual hands a driver's license. That satisfies the inquiry.
End of story there.
As far as the residency and the immigration issue, that's the end of story. The officer should just issue the traffic ticket, let the person go. Let's take that same scenario, though, as say as the officer is issuing the traffic ticket. He gets the driver's license. He's riding it. He's no longer even looking into immigration status, but he looks in the car as he's writing the ticket, and he sees a baggie of marijuana on the floor of the car. He arrests the individual for that marijuana. Now, the second part of 2B kicks in. The officer is mandated to inquire onto the immigration status of that individual. The only way to solve that, according to the way the law is written, is an inquiry through either a 287G, an ICE agent, or a CB, a Border Patrol agent. Well, as you know, 287G agreements with Arizona have been rescinded by DHS. So it really means an ICE agent or a Border Patrol agent. And a phone call will be made, and that's what we're trying to determine. How long will that response be? Because if we in Tucson are going to increase that, because when we talk about those criminal arrests where we normally just give you a ticket and let you go, that happens 36 to 37,000 times a year in Tucson. You add on to that the other things where an officer is inquiring even before he writes a ticket. It'd be easy to say 50,000 inquiries in Tucson alone. Now add in Phoenix, Mesa, Chandler, Tempe, Gilbert. Could easily be 500,000 phone calls that ICE or Border Patrol were not receiving before. And they have already said they're not going to up their staffing or the phone lines to handle that call load. So what type of response are we going to get is a big inquiry.
I wanted to ask, in that scenario where an officer stops someone for missing a turn signal or, you know, a traffic infraction, the driver has a driver's license, but there's three other people in the car who may or may not be in the country legally. What does the officer do in relation to those people?
It depends. The officer, if they can articulate reasonable suspicion that they feel those people are here illegally, they are to inquire about that, because that's a legal contact stop. Those are passengers in the vehicle that the officer legally stopped. Even though they're not driving it, the officer develops reasonable suspicion. The way we're interpreting it, he is required to at least inquire either on their status. The individuals and what their requirements are to respond if they're not driving, I don't believe that they're required to respond in that area. So it's there are a lot of intricacies that have not been thought of, which has been one of my objections to this law, and that immigration law is a very, very complex issue. Even to get the 287G status, it requires 5 weeks of training by federal authorities before a local officer is commissioned as 280G certified and able to enforce federal immigration law, because there's civil violations, criminal violations, overstays of visa, a variety of issues. Yet we were going to put out local law enforcement officer after a 90-minute video, the first 25 minutes of it, which really just said, don't racially profile, don't racially profile, and say that now you can go out and enforce this very complex set of laws. I don't think that's wise.
Well, that brings up another part of this, which is we're talking about reasonable suspicion, and that's throughout the court decision and in the law. What does that mean in layman's terms?
Well, in layman's terms, it's what a reasonable person would suspect, that the person they're encountering, usually it's dealt with criminal activity, has committed, is about to commit, or will commit some type of criminal act. Now that's been ported over to status. So what a reasonable person would believe that someone is in the country illegally. And we try to take information from what Border Patrol or ICE uses to determine their process and see if we can give that guidelines to officers. But it's going to be very difficult for officers who have not done it for a long time to document it, because there's also a provision in the law that allows anyone who feels we're not enforcing it to sue us. So they're going to have to document either why they took action or why they did not take action.
I mean, is that like language, apparel, things like
it
that
could
are
be a whole variety of things. It could be language issues. It could be appearance. It could be traveling together. It could be self-admission. It could be documents that are found. It's a totality of all the situations taken in context.
Roberto Villasenor, the police chief of Tucson, is with us on the Buckmaster Show. Sarah Garrett Gasson is here from the Arizona Daily Star. We're going to take a break right here. Listen to the fine lineup of Buckmaster Show sponsors, the people that make this program possible. When we come back, we'll talk a bit about some crime statistics that have just been released from the FBI with the chief. Stay with us.
The RTA, delivering our promise to you during the past 5 years, completing over 400 projects, including 5 major roadways. Projects underway include the modern streetcar in downtown Tucson, Cold Road Extension to Sabino Canyon Road, and Speedway from Camino Seco to Houghton. Please watch for workers and obey all traffic signs. Your tax dollars create jobs and make travel in our region faster and safer. The RTA, delivering our promise to you.
Two of the world's largest pharmaceutical giants, Roche's Ventana Medical Systems and Sanofi, know where bio works. It works at Innovation Park in Oro Valley, one of the 10 best towns for families, according to Family Circle magazine. Bioscience and bioindustry, working together at Innovation Park with 275 acres of inspiring environment ready for biodevelopment. Learn more about where bio works at innovationparkaz.com. Vero Amore restaurants are known as the place for fresh and healthy pizzas, pastas, paninis, salads, and more. Every flavorful dish is handcrafted using the finest local and imported ingredients available. Vero Amore's award-winning wood-fired pizzas, certified authentic by the world-renowned Verace Pizza Napolitana Academy, is pizza perfection. Vero Amore, North Swan at Camp Lowell, and in Marana at Dove Mountain, and on the web at veroamorepizza.com and on Facebook.
Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley is a very special place, offering a continuum of health care in a resort atmosphere. Splendido received 2007 Best of 50 Plus Housing Awards from the National Association of Home Builders for overall best continuing care retirement community and interior design. Splendido offers priority access to on-site assisted living, skilled nursing, and memory support care if ever needed. Find out more at SplendidoTucson.com.
Inside Pyramid Federal Credit Union, customer service is what we do. Outside, community service is who we are. Inside, we help generations achieve their financial goals. Outside, we help those in need. We reach out to our members, we reach out to our community. Because Pyramid Federal Credit Union is passionate about one thing, people. Pyramid Federal Credit Union. Improve your financial life.
There are a million people in metropolitan Tucson, and they have a million stories to tell. That's why there is TucsonCitizen.com, the voice of Tucson. Nearly 100 citizen journalists and bloggers, including the Buckmaster Show, report the news and provide perspective, opinion, and information about everything from local politics to the Arizona Wildcats. Visit TucsonCitizen.com today to read what you can't find in traditional media or to contact us to add your voice to the voice of Tucson, TucsonCitizen.com.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. Chief Villasenor of the Tucson Police Department is with us. Sarah Garrett Gasson is here from the Arizona Daily Star. We've been talking about Section 2B of the SB 1070 and what the Tucson Police Department is preparing to implement that. I want to leave that topic for a moment. A couple of issues will be coming up on the three-month anniversary of the kidnapping of Isabel Solis. Anything you can tell us? I'm sure many people wondering, is there anything new, Chief Villasenor?
Well, there's not really any new information that I can share with the public. I know that this case maybe has dropped somewhat out of the public eye, but it definitely has not dropped out of our eye. And we are constantly working this case. We have weekly updates as to the status of the case. We're developing leads through our own investigative methods, but it obviously has slowed down some. The flood of information has slowed down to a trickle at this point, and it gives our investigators time to follow up on the leads and re-follow up on leads and go back and review information and see if we missed something or if there's something that we want to go back and reaffirm. And there's a variety of things that we keep doing.
And the number of leads, is it into over 1,000?
Oh, easily yeah. Over 1,000.
And the community, though, has been very helpful, haven't they?
They've been fantastic. The immediate response to this case is like something that I haven't seen in the 32 years that I've been on the department. We've had other cases with missing children, and we were talking somewhat before the show in that I think social media and the instantaneous availability of information and the expectation that people have for instant information really expanded this case rapidly to a national level, quite different than almost any other case that we've had in our history. And that was helpful and also sometimes just another area that we had to also manage.
Here's Sarah Garrett Gass on the Star.
I wanted to ask along the lines of the public awareness, since we are so, and I'm not necessarily speaking about this case in particular, mm-hmm. but since we are so close to the border with Mexico, do cases like this, kidnapping of small children, do they have the same sort of public awareness? Some people might be on the lookout, you know, in Sonora, mm-hmm. and does it work back and forth?
We communicate with counterparts in Mexican government, Mexican police, to let them know we are on the lookout. Within hours, that information had been transmitted. So, yes, and that's really with a lot of our crime that occurs here. We never extricate ourselves from the border and our proximity to it, in that we know that oftentimes with the narcotic-related issues or gun-related issues, there's a border connection, and we communicate quite rapidly, oftentimes through the U.S. Marshals Service, who have excellent connections down on the border. Since we're a local, you know, law enforcement 60 miles north, we partner with federal authorities that have the connection south of the border to get that information out.
Chief Villasenor is with us. The calendar year statistics have been released by the FBI just recently. The Part 1 crimes, those are the top seven crime categories. Overall crime down about 2%. But there's some areas for concern, correct?
Yes, just like everyone else in the nation, for the past 10 years or so, we've been experiencing drops in crime. I would say the past years, you know, just like all statistics, they're cyclical in nature. And we have had a long, very fortuitous run going down, but that can't last forever. And I think things have kind of leveled off and starting to see a creep up again in crime statistics, particularly, unfortunately, in violent crime. That's starting to go up slightly, more so in the first 4 or 6 months of this year. But our property crime is still staying down, so that brings our overall crime numbers slightly down. I don't know if the 2% is exactly where we're at, but we were slightly lower. And we're trying to continue that to maintain the level of crime and not let it rise up. But that's something that probably is inevitable everywhere across the country. When I talk to other chiefs, they're all seeing some of the same type of issues.
And every chief has a theory about why it's going down there, overall across the country.
Crime. There were a lot of theories put forward why crime went for such a prolonged time, continued to go down. Going from the issue, and obviously we would like to think our community policing efforts and our partnership efforts had a lot to do with that, and I believe they did, but I think the availability of communication with cell phones, instantaneous reporting of people out there helped serve as a deterrent. Unfortunately, I also think that, you know, we're talking about people have an instant expectation of response for everything. We're an instant society. And we don't have the resources for those lower-level crimes to be there instantly. And my concern is that maybe some people just aren't calling like they used to. So we very actively try and work against that and tell people the importance of calling in and reporting crime.
Here's Sarah Garrett-Gasson.
I wanted to ask about, since you know we're in the summer now and the heat increases, and the common perception is like crime goes up or violent crime goes up when the heat rises. Is that actually true, or is that just sort of an urban legend?
It's somewhat of an urban legend. We do have more issues at nighttime during the summer, primarily because you have youth that are out more and they don't have school the next day. So they're out and having a good time and they're socializing, and that causes more activity for us. The heat causes people's nerves to be fried, and you have issues there. So we do get busy during the summer, but we also get busy at other times of the year. And, you know, there's always been the adage about full moons cause
right.
people go crazy. And I will tell you, as a cop who's worked out there at night at full moons, I believe in that.
There's a little something
but if
to
I
that.
Look at the stats, I can't prove it, you know, from empirical data. But I can tell you some of the greatest stories were nights that we had full moons out there and the way people acted. So who knows?
Sarah, you had a question about videotaping.
Well, I did. Going back to the reasonable suspicion and the SB 1070 decision, when it's pretty much a given that there's going to be lawsuits and accusations of racial profiling,
yes,
or non-enforcement on both sides, with the officers kind of in the middle. I wanted to know, what is the department's stance and your stance on, you know, if someone is pulled over recording it with a cell phone camera? I know that some people and some jurisdictions are very, very much against that. So I'm wondering, could this be a way to protect the people involved?
Okay, I understand your point there now. We have video recorders on our patrol cars that capture a lot of our traffic stops. But we also have experienced several times with people who record our actions. There's even a group out there that advertise that if you're stopped by police, call these cell numbers and we will be out there to record you. So we teach our officers that people have a right to do that. And just act professionally, conduct yourselves appropriately, and there's nothing to worry about with that. Obviously, some officers probably would prefer it not, because people can also edit video, and we've had occurrences like that. But we can't stop that. We advise our officers to conduct themselves as professionals, and when they do that, we will stand behind them.
Is the department hiring new officers? What does your staffing level look like?
Yes, we are hiring right now. We are very fortunate that we received two federal grants in the past couple of years, one for 50 officers, another for 25. So we have 75 additional officers over what we ended up with when the budget cuts all stopped. So we're hiring to try and fill those positions as well as to fill any vacancies that arrive. Right now, I'm about 40 officers below my authorized staffing level, which is 998 officers when you count the federally funded officers.
And for a city our size, that's about right?
Well, that's low. It's not what we would like, but cities across the country are all dealing with that issue, where I can't think of a city that has not lost officers in the past 3 years. So
it's a great career. It's a great career for someone out there, and I guess your pay is comparable, right, to other jurisdictions?
We're working on that with council, and we want to remain competitive. It's hard to do that with the Phoenix Valley because they have a better tax base.
Chief Villasenor, thank you for spending a half an hour with us. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me here.
All right. We have the Reporters Roundtable coming up next. Sarah Garrett Gasson, the star, and Mark Evans, the administrator of TucsonCitizen.com, will be here. As usual, there's plenty to talk about.
SRN News, I'm Rich Thomason in Washington. George Zimmerman is a free man again. Zimmerman, who shot and killed Trayvon Martin, left a Florida jail earlier today, less than 24 hours after a judge set his bail at $1 million. The stock market's gains from earlier in the week have been wiped out today. Share prices fell in response to the latest employment report. For the third straight month, hiring was sluggish, with just 80,000 jobs added in June. The jobless rate stays at 8.2%, a level that Republican Mitt Romney calls unacceptably high. Secretary of State Clinton says she's held productive talks with Palestinian President Abbas, hopes to build momentum for another peace push when she visits Israel in 10 days. The Dow down 132. More details at srnnews.com.
For 5 years, the RTA has been delivering our promise to you, finishing over 400 projects, including 5 major roadways, with more than a dozen projects underway, including the modern streetcar in downtown Tucson. Please use caution and obey all traffic signs. The RTA has ongoing support of expanded SunTran, SunVan service, SunExpress, and SunShuttle neighborhood service. Your tax dollars create jobs and make travel around our region faster and safer. The RTA, delivering our promise to you.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Think credit unions don't have the locations or ATM networks that the big banks do? Think again. Pyramid Federal Credit Union offers fee-free ATM access at 120 ATMs in Southern Arizona and 60,000 ATMs throughout the country, plus free shared branch access at credit unions nationwide. And the convenience continues online with free bill pay and 24/7 online banking. So no matter where you are, you're just around the corner from Pyramid Federal Credit Union. What are you waiting for? Open your account today. Pyramid Federal Credit Union. Improve your financial life.
If you love antiques like I do, I strongly suggest a visit to Adobe House Antiques, specializing in early 20th century European and American Western art. They also have a fantastic selection of antique light fixtures. Adobe House Antiques in the Jostler Design Building at 2700 North Campbell. Adobe House Antiques, 325-9439. That's 325-9439. As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com, or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com. simple solution to foot and lower back problems could be a top-quality, custom-made foot orthotic created by Bob Novak. A certified pedorthist, Bob is the best in Southern Arizona in the creation of the right foot support that your body needs and at a price you can afford. Please give Bob Novak a call, 795-2553, or visit him at Arizona Limb and Brace, Rosemont and 5th Street. Your feet will thank you every day. Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show on AM 1030 KVOI, Tucson's The Intelligent Voice. Time for our Friday Reporters Roundtable, where local journalists get together with me and we talk about the top stories of the week. Joining me today, Sarah Garrett-Gasson, editorial writer of the Arizona Daily Star, and Mark Evans, administrator for TucsonCitizen.com. If you have a question or comment, the Buckmaster Show live line is now available for you, 790-2040. And we're delighted to say that the Buckmaster Show, the Reporters Roundtable portion presented by Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley, a true continuing care retirement community. Find out more at SplendidoTucson.com. Mark, good to see you.
What do you say, BB?
Sarah, we have already welcomed Sarah, our interview with the chief.
Yes.
We heard you had a great 4th of July. How about you, Mark?
4th of July is not a big deal for me
holidays.
Because I don't like to sit in Schwitz. And that's the only thing you can do to go see it is get there early and then sit there and sweat and wait for the fireworks to go off.
Sweat for the fireworks.
Right.
But, you know,
I watch it on TV.
Being
so
in the middle of the week and being a news guy, and I'm sure you probably had similar thoughts. Well, maybe it'd be a slow week.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
It's just not.
It hasn't been that kind of year. We haven't had a slow week yet.
I'm going to begin today with the nonpartisan Arizona primaries because this could really change the way we elect people here in Arizona. This will go before the voters. And what are we talking about, Mark Evans?
This is an idea that would create nonpartisan elections, mandatory nonpartisan elections across the state, which I believe also affects some of the federal offices except for president. So all the state legislatures, the counties, cities, everybody would have to have a nonpartisan election in which you have a primary and it's everybody in the pool primary. And then if depending on the number of seats, depending on the number of votes you get in the primary, if you actually get a majority of the votes, then you win and you get to be seated. If you don't, then you have a runoff, which would be two members for every open seat. So if it was like the House of Representatives, or if two open seats, the top four people would run. Or if it's just a single seat, the top two people would run in a runoff election. They've done it in other states, and it's kind of a response to the growth of independents. This is an idea that's been kicked around forever. Some states do it. Some cities do it. It's the way a lot of the local city elections, Oro Valley does it this way, Marana does it this way. And it never really got traction on a bigger state level because you had, 40-45% of people were in one party and the other 40-45% were in the other party, Democrat or Republican. And then there was a handful of independents and strange libertarians. And now you've got where the independent party, if you can call them that, is the second largest group of voters. There's even more independents now than there are Democrats.
Yeah, if you think of it as a pie, a third, pretty much roughly now, a third independents.
Right, and so you've got all the moderates have been abandoning both parties, both the Democrats and the Republicans, and they get shut out of the primary system. Now, there is an argument that independents can vote in the primary, but they have to choose a side. You can't go in and say, I want to vote a little bit on party B and a little bit on party A. Mm-hmm. You have to say, I want the Democrat ballot or I want the Republican ballot. And that discourages independents because that's the opposite of being independent. And so they tend not to vote in primary elections. And so what you get are mostly the ardent, really hardcore supporters that turn out for primary elections. And they pick the most Puritan person that they can find that really cleaves to the ideology of the party. And then voters are then left in the general of, you know, a choice of kind of a lesser of two evils, the most Republican that they could find, or the most Democrat. And this would give more moderate people an opportunity to break through that system and to be actually make it to the general and give voters a chance. And so I think it's a great idea, and it's going to be on the ballot in November. They turned in 350,000 signatures yesterday.
So you like it. Do you like it, Sarah?
Yeah, I do. We haven't taken a position on it at the Star's editorial board, but speaking personally, yeah, I think it's a fine idea.
So would there be an R or a D or after their name?
Yes, they included that, although it's not really all that relevant.
So
it's just a
way
to
mandatory.
Know whether the person's has a party affiliation.
Well, there's a couple things that I think recommend it, and a couple downsides that I see. I think if voters are engaged and they get to know the candidates as people, I think it's great. I think it gets away from the sort of hardcore ends of the political spectrum, which we end up with some really kind of mind-blowing general election candidates in terms of ideology. But the downside is people are busy. People are not all that engaged. And while I would like to think that this would get people involved and get them civically minded, I don't know that it actually will. And so I think there's a danger that you go with name recognition, which would mean, like, say, if, and I'm just pulling this off the top of my head, like if Jim Click ran for something, he's going to win because everyone knows who Jim Click is, not necessarily because if they knew his beliefs, they would vote for him. So I think that is a potential downside. But I think it's something that the voters should have the ability to say yay or nay to.
And that argument is one of the counterarguments that are made to it, is that it really emphasizes money. So if we already are bemoaning the effect of money in our system, this would increase it, because in order for someone to break through and to overcome the power of incumbency and to get themselves to be known, especially someone who's in moderate positions, they're really going to have to saturate the airwaves, the direct mail, have a really good election infrastructure. And so, you know, it's a trade-off. If we keep going with the system we have, or let's try something different. I think we need to try something different.
And I think it either comes down to money and kind of the nonpartisan primary approach, or the other currency that is used now is power, and it's within the party, influence within a small group of people, and it's that small group that ends up basically selecting the candidates for the general election. And so, and a lot of times, good candidates are losing in the primary because the more moderate people aren't coming out to – the independents aren't coming out to support them. So we end up with polarization. So while – money is a potential downside to the nonpartisan approach, we can't ignore the fact that power and influence and that sort of party influence is already at play. I mean, it's not a fair field no matter which way we go.
Right.
And this measure, if approved in November, would affect not only statewide legislative and congressional races, it would carry over to other elections, but not necessarily school board, which are
already nonpartisan. Yeah.
Nonpartisan. Okay, let's move on to TUSD. And how many times we have talked, Mark Evans and Sarah Garrett Gasson, about TUSD having an image problem? Well, 62% of the people who took a survey that TUSD put online have positive things to say. Now, 62%? Is that good or?
Well, I think you have to look at the survey from a survey standpoint. I'm scientifically speaking, I'm sure it's not very representative. It was about 2,000 people, self-selected, who had a computer, went on, took the survey, and said that they have good thoughts and good feeling about being part of the district. And tellingly, it's most of the people who responded were parents, and that's sort of as it should be, because the people who are actually using the schools, the parents, the kids, are the ones whose opinion is probably most informed. That said, it's kind of like Congress. Everyone hates Congress, but you like your congressperson. So I think you can be happy with the school that you're in, or the principal or the teachers in your kid's second grade class, and not necessarily see some of the bigger picture operational problems.
That survey is scientifically invalid. It is simply a survey of people who bothered to take the time, who have a computer. It's interesting information to know, but if the school board bases any policy decisions based on that, they will be making a significant error thinking that they have support for these types of things. It's just not valid.
And I also want to say that the other opinion poll that it doesn't come across in a nice, happy survey is the number of people who are leaving the district for other options. I think that is something parents pulling their kids out, going to a charter school or a different district, or from one school to another within TUSD. I think those are the people whose opinion really needs to be taken into account. Right.
Yeah. TUSD, certainly some big problems. They've got money problems, again, $17 million shortfall to fix those. Let's move on to the report that was issued this week concerning Councilmember Paul Cunningham on the Tucson City Council and concerning his alcohol-influenced behavior on a business trip to San Diego. What happens now, Mark Evans, after this report?
Nothing. The report made a recommendation. It said – it found that he not only did he act horribly when he was drunk in San Diego, but it indicated that he'd done it a couple of times before, and that was really the only new information that was there. And in those two other times, he was also intoxicated. He's admitted that he's got a drinking problem. He is getting help for that. He has owned it. He's apologized to anybody who, you know, even people he doesn't even know, he'll apologize to you about it. He's horribly embarrassed by it. So as what the council can do about it and whether they can do anything more than say, you know, tisk, tisk, shame, shame, no. They're talking about making them all – the recommendations are to make them all go get some counseling, you know. If I'm a council member who behaves myself in public and doesn't have a drinking problem and didn't act like an idiot in San Diego, I would say, why do I have to go? But, you know, okay, fine. We'll make them all go if they want to.
Sensitivity training.
Right, yeah. And then the other thing is that they might pass some new rules that govern council behavior, adopting a lot of what's been the rules that Phoenix has, in which the most severe thing that they can do as a council is censure the other council member, which is, again, saying, tisk, tisk, shame, shame, you shouldn't have done that. The only real power that you have to punish a council member for doing something egregious is to kick him out. And I don't think that he's done anything that really warrants recall. And so voters in 4 years will be able to consider this and whether he's overcome it, or 3 years, depending on what happens with that state law that changes the city elections.
Sarah, your take on the report.
Well, in the report, one thing I did find interesting is that the description of the event in San Diego, how one of the city employees walked away, you know, obviously offended. And from what we've heard about what was said, understandably so, but that the other two, I think, city employees did not leave because they didn't want basically to abandon him to rove around other parties and, you know, at the
further embarrass himself in the city.
Yeah, in the city. So I think making the best of what sounded like a really awful, embarrassing, horrendous situation, I think we have to kind of give those two employees credit. I mean, not to denigrate the one who left,
there with
but
him
trying and, to contain yeah. what was obviously right. a bad situation and keep the
And that was something that had come to my mind when I heard about it is, why are all these people from the city just letting their council member act like an idiot? Why don't someone go put an arm around him and say, come on, Paul, it's time to go to bed, you know?
A couple of developments with Rosemont concerning the water line, the CAP water line with Rosemont, and this story on the front page of Sarah's newspaper. Tony Davis had a front page piece that a decision may be coming a little sooner than we had expected from the Forest Service. That decision may come down in December. Meanwhile, there are all sorts of reports that Rosemont is having the financial issues being considered here.
Right, I've heard those as well, and it's the kind of thing that people who oppose the mine are going to grab onto any sort of doubt or hint that this may not happen. What the Forest Service did, which was kind of a surprise that Tony Davis wrote about, is that they said that the timetable could be moved up to December, which is kind of a definite time rather than just sort of indefinitely putting it off into the future. So that is something that we need to keep an eye on, because the opponents of the mine, and there are many, many, many people who oppose it for many different reasons, are not going to just give up and go, oh, well, and that's going to be the end of it. We're going to hear about this for a long time to come.
I wonder how much this has to do with the election. You know, I mean, this is pure speculation on my part, which is
that's the best kind.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, try and get this done before there's a change in administration, or worry that there might be a change in administration. But I mean, who knows? Great. Let's get it done in December. I mean, we were supposed to have this done in 2009. As far as I'm concerned, I think the mine's fine. Just go ahead and build it. I don't see any reason to deny them their permits, at least based on the federal law. So if they can get it done in December, great.
Next week on Friday, we will have Fletcher McCusker, who is head of the newly reconstituted Rio Nuevo Board. And they did pass a budget just over of $11 million last Friday.
Yeah, I mean, it's they published their budget documents online. You go and look at it, and it does look like they've got some money sitting there that they could be spending if they wanted to. And let's hope, I would ask Fletcher when he's here what he plans to do with the $3 million, because I think their debt service annually is only $8 million. So they have some legal bills they have to pay, and there's some lawsuits they have to decide whether they want to continue with. But by looking at that budget, there's some money there, and we got a TCC that could use some of that money. So hopefully they'll find a way to spend it there.
And Sarah, the University of Arizona, the first woman president.
Yes.
Starting officially, I guess this week, she takes over, the 21st president of the University of Arizona. Ann Weaver Hart is her name. We wish her well, and we'll hope to have her here on the program very soon to talk about her vision. Certainly, this is a very difficult time for higher education.
Yes, she's stepping into a big job at the University of Arizona under the best of circumstances. But given the legislature and the budget situation, I think she's going to have quite a stack of things on her to-do list.
Oh, yes.
And an attaboy for Eugene Sanders, because I think he did a fabulous job
in
the interim.
Yeah. Yes, we like Dr. Sanders. Did a great job. All right. 12:50 on the Buckmaster Show. Sarah Garrett Gasson, thank you very much. And Mark Evans, thank you. And both of you have a great weekend.
Thanks, you too.
Thanks,
all right, Weekend Watch is coming up next with Matt Russell.
Hi, this is Al Zaragoza, the voice of Culligan Water in Southern Arizona. Everyone is switching to high-efficiency appliances because they have money, and a Culligan high-efficiency water softener does the same. But did you know that you can rent rather than buy? Think about it. No equipment to pay for upfront, money-saving purchase options if you change your mind, and service calls are included in the rental rate. In fact, you'll never have to pay for another water softener, ever. So now you can get all the benefits of soft water for less when you rent from Culligan. Imagine a spot-free home, softer skin, and brighter laundry for dollars a day. Even better, a Culligan high-efficiency water softener saves up to 46% on water, salt, and energy, plus helps all your appliances last longer. Let your Culligan man take care of your water when you rent the world's most efficient water softener. Call Culligan Water at 792-9700. 792-9700. Culligan, better water, pure and simple.
Why should you fly out of TIA? Easy. Do the math. First, airfares are extremely competitive, so you won't spend more on your tickets. Second, you'll save at least 4 hours of your precious time, not to mention a bunch of money on gas. Third, covered parking right by the terminal is only $9 a day. And fourth, TIA offers daily nonstop service to many of your favorite destinations. So, what does it all add up to? Easy. Fly TIA. It's the way to go.
With 275 acres of stunning environment, Innovation Park in Oro Valley is ready for development. Already, two of the world's largest pharmaceuticals, Roche's Ventana Medical Systems and Sanofi, are settled in Innovation Park. Innovation Park, a great place to do business in Oro Valley, named one of the 10 best towns for families by Family Circle magazine. Find out more at innovationparkaz.com. Noble Hops Gastro Pub is for people who revere their beer and their food. Noble Hops specializes in high-quality, delicious food and offers an impressive, ever-changing selection of handcrafted beers from around the world with more than 24 on tap. Noble Hops, a pub for foodies at the southeast corner of La Canada and Lambert in Oro Valley, and always on the web at noblehopspub.com and on Facebook.
Dragonfly Village is in the midst of a capital campaign to build a 12-building village on a portion of the Amity Foundation's Circle Tree Ranch to reunite children in need with their families. Upon completion, the village will have housing for 100 families annually. Please be a part of making the Dragonfly Village dream a reality. Find out more at dragonflyvillage.org. That's dragonflyvillage.org.
Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley is one of Southern Arizona's crown jewels. You will find that the services and amenities offered at Splendido rival those of a fine resort. But what sets Splendido apart is a continuum of health care that allows for a full life today, knowing tomorrow is secure. As a true continuing care retirement community, Splendido offers priority access to on-site assisted living, skilled nursing, and memory support care if ever needed. Find out more at SplendidoTucson.com.
If you're having foot or lower back pain, you're not alone. My foot doctor recommended custom foot orthotics created by Bob Novak. Bob is a certified pedorthist and best in Southern Arizona at creating just the right foot support at a price you can afford. Please give Bob Novak, the owner of Arizona Limb and Brace, a call at 795-2553 or visit Bob at Rosemont and 5th. I did, and my feet thank me every day.
Of course, that music heralds the weekend on the Buckmaster Show, and this portion of Weekend Watch brought to you by Silver City, Grand County, New Mexico. Just 3.5 hours east of Tucson to historic Silver City, known for its vibrant arts community. Downtown Silver City hosts a variety of galleries, gift shops, historic buildings, fine dining, and quaint homes. Plenty of great accommodations in Silver City, including Cottage of Whispering Canyon. To find out more, visit southwestnewmexico.org. And now we welcome the man himself, the culinary cruiser, Matt Russell, who already has taken off from Russell Public Communication and is starting the afternoon out by the pool. And I hate to say it, but when it's the 4th of July, he breaks out that red, white, and blue Speedo. Not a very pretty sight, to say the least.
Must you subject your listeners to such torture, Bill Buckmaster? My goodness.
I hope you had a wonderful 4th of July. And hey, I mean, it was kind of like a weekend in the middle of the week, and now it really is the weekend.
Yeah, we tried not to go back to work on the morning after, but we somehow crawled into the office to get things done. Our clients are that important to us, Bill.
Yeah, I know they are, and I think you did probably leave about noon. But anyway, a happy hour pick of the week. I always love to drop by Rick's Cafe. It's in the neighborhood, and I like the place.
Yeah, it's great. Now that the monsoons have cooled things down a bit, the patio is, I think, one of the greatest patios in Tucson. So our happy hour pick of the day, as you said, Rick's Cafe on River and Craycroft. From 4 to 6 p.m. today, you'll enjoy dollar-off drinks and half-price appetizers, which, of course, includes those famous crab cakes with the garlic aioli. Now, Bill, after happy hour, I like to stick around for the all-you-can-eat fish and chips and the live music, which starts on the patio at 6. Bill, this is my kind of Friday.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun Friday, and the weather has been pretty good. Things really cooling off. Not as bad as it could be. How about the Iron Chef menu?
Yeah, you know, we've talked quite a bit about Chef Ryan Clark from the Lodge on the Desert being crowned once again as our Iron Chef here in Tucson, and people are really kind of starting to clamor to get a taste of the food that earned him that victory. So for the next 3 weekends, starting tonight, the Lodge will be featuring a different winning dish for all to try, exactly as it was prepared for those judges. So kicking off this weekend, the chef is going to feature his gingered mousseline of sea bass, which one of the judges told me is life-changing. So get to the Lodge on the Desert this weekend to try Chef Ryan Clark's award-winning cuisine on Alvernon, just south of 5th.
All right, well, so far you have mentioned a couple of my favorite places, Rick's Cafe and Lodge on the Desert. And, of course, I always love to support Matt Russell, the Tucson Originals.
Absolutely. And, of course, speaking of great patios, we love one of the Tucson Originals, the patio at Boca on Speedway, just east of Euclid. It's a great casual venue for just kicking back with some delicious tacos and tasty tequilas. Which are both featured all summer long. I think I've had one or two before I called into the show today. So for only $20, you're going to get four carne asada tacos, two margaritas, and rice and beans. And if tacos and tequilas aren't your thing, Bill, visit TucsonOriginals.com for all the $20 summer specials available at member restaurants.
And besides the culinary cruiser, he's the taco king. Matt Russell, have a great weekend. Thank
Cheers,
you.
Bill.
Thanks to our friends at Splendido for making the Buckmaster Show possible on Friday. Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley, a true continuing care retirement community. Check it out. Beautiful website, beautiful place, SplendidoTucson.com. Also, bottled water on the Buckmaster Show provided by the best bottled water in town, Culligan. What is it about Culligan water? Well, I'll tell you, folks, Culligan water, it just simply tastes better. The Buckmaster Show is a production of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC. On behalf of our team, my producer, the lovely and talented Rosemary Brandt, I am Bill Buckmaster, wishing you a wonderful and safe weekend. We'll be back with you Monday. Have a great weekend.
Ten thirty, KVOI Cortero Tucson, and 9:30 KAPR Douglas, the Voice, Good News Radio Network.